The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
Begin by turning over to Psalm 19. Psalm 19. Book of Psalms is an amazing collection of songs written mostly by David, who was a very talented musician, as well as a great leader for the people of God. And this son of Jesse loved God. He loved God's way. He loved God's law. And he wrote heartfelt songs about the way of God. And one of them is Psalm 19. In Psalm 19, and let's go ahead and go down to verse 7, because that's really the focal point of the message today. He goes on to say here, as he speaks about the glory of God being declared in the heavens, in verse 7, he says, "The law of the eternal is perfect, converting the soul, and the testimony of the eternal is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the eternal are right, rejoicing the heart. And the commandment of the eternal is pure, enlightening the eyes." And I can't help it as I read this. It really does bring joy to your heart, knowing that among all of the confusion of the crazy things people are doing in this world, it's really inspiring and comforting to know that there are things that are right and pure and enlightening and comforting, and they come from God. "The fear or the reverence of the eternal is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the eternal are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yes, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. And moreover," he goes on to say, "moreover, by them, the laws, the commandments, the judgments, the statutes, by them, your servant," or we could say servants, all of us, "are warned. And in keeping them, there is great reward." We don't always see those rewards right away, but there will be great rewards. And so we see David admired God. He admired everything about him. He admired his law, his mercy, the hope that God gives to people. And David strived very hard to keep God's law. And though he was a good man, he was not without fault. We are aware of this. When it comes to keeping God's law, we know that David broke God's law on occasion. I don't think this was something he did regularly, but we do have documented in the scriptures a few times when David did things that greatly offended God. And it's likely that he made other mistakes, as we all make a lot of mistakes as we grow in grace and knowledge, our understanding, and our application of keeping God's law. And throughout David's conversion, he came to realize that there are sins that are sometimes done in relative ignorance. I don't say complete ignorance, but relatively, you know, sometimes we don't think about it deeply enough, and we may commit a sin, which actually could be avoided if we simply put a little more thought, a little more effort beforehand, before following through on something that God would consider a sin. And I think David talks about this next, in this next verse here, these next two verses of this psalm, verses 11 and 12, 12 and 13, where he says, "Who can understand his errors?" Not like we can't understand them, but it's like a lot of times we don't truly get it until we mess up, right? "Who can understand his errors?" Then he says, "Cleanse me from secret faults. Keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. And then I shall be blameless, and I shall be innocent of great transgression." What are these presumptuous sins that David spoke about, that he associates, actually, if you read it all the way through, he associates them with great transgression? And how can they be avoided? Well, let's look at this in Deuteronomy 17 a little further. Deuteronomy chapter 17. There are some presumptuous sins that you and I may commit fairly frequently. I shouldn't say on a regular basis, but sometimes we do something presumptuously thinking that, you know, we're doing the right thing. For example, we might, you know, perhaps we live in a household where somebody bought some yogurt and they put it in the refrigerator. And we kept seeing that yogurt sitting there for several days. And finally, we kind of look at the date and say, you know, this expired yesterday. We might take it out, throw it in the trash. Let's just get rid of it. And then the person who purchased that item comes in and say, hey, where's my yogurt? Oh, I threw it away. And we took it into matters into our own hands when it really wasn't our property, wasn't our position to do that. But we thought we were doing something for the, you know, for their benefit, for everybody's benefit. But it really, maybe they got upset. You know, yogurt actually lasts longer than in the expiration date. It's just kind of best buy date. But that's just one example. So sometimes we might do something presumptuously in this regard, thinking that, you know, we're doing some good, but we're really overstepping our bounds, you know, our own authority, or the authority that we have. But in this regard, I'm going to talk today about something that is a little more serious, a lot more serious, because it's associated with a great transgression. Because, you know, when it comes to God's law is very clear and unambiguous in many ways, but there are times when a judgment needs to be made because it's not exactly clear. There are some gray areas when it comes to certain behaviors, certain aspects of daily living anyway. There are some areas where we need to make a judgment call. And these difficult, and I shouldn't say daily living, but these difficult and unusual, I would call them, unusual situations, because God doesn't leave a lot up to guessing, if you let me put it that way. There are times when we need counsel on such matters. We should seek counsel in order for us to do the right thing. And so we should search out a matter. You know, like the proverb says, it's an attitude of a king to search out a matter and to see what God's will is, what exactly should be done in these sometimes difficult or unusual circumstances. So the procedure for doing this during David's time was actually explained decades, maybe 100 or more years prior to David's existence, when God dictated laws, statutes, and judgments to Moses and the people of Israel when they came out of Egypt. And so Deuteronomy, well, I think it's, I have in my notes here 17, but I think it's 18. Let's see. No, it's Deuteronomy 17 and verse 8. That's what it is. This is discussed, was discussed, given to Moses and to the leadership at that time, when it says, if a matter arises which is too hard for you to judge, between degrees of guilt for bloodshed, between one judgment or another, or between one punishment or another, matters of controversy within your gates, then you shall arise and go up to the place which the Eternal your God chooses. So he's talking about the tabernacle. He's talking about the ministry. Go to the ministry and to the place where God put his name. And you shall come to the priests, the Levites, to the judge there in those days, and inquire of them. And they shall pronounce upon you the sentence of judgment. And you shall do according to the sentence which they pronounce upon you in that place which the Eternal chooses. You shall be careful to do according to all that they order you, according to the sentence of the law in which they instruct you, according to the judgment which they tell you, you shall do. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left from the sentence which they pronounce upon you. And now the man who acts presumptuously and will not heed the priests who stands to minister there before the Eternal your God or the judge, that man, it says, shall die. And so you shall put away the evil from Israel, and all the people shall hear and fear, have respect for, and no longer act presumptuously. And so we see that God takes this matter of presumption very seriously. He said that if you go to one of his ordained ministers and they give you counsel and they say, here's what needs to be done in this situation. And people at that time said, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to follow through. He said, put those people to death. I'm not going to have such insubordination among the people of Israel, among a nation of God-revering people that he was building. So presumption and being presumptuous, it's derived from the root word, which is presume. Now, this word presume, it has several definitions that I had read last night, but they all point to basically the same thing. They may be used the word presume, presumption, or presumptuous might be used a little different depending on the context of the situation or the sentence, the structure of the sentence. But they all point to the same thing. Here's a few definitions. It says, take to be the case or to be true, except without verification or proof. So it would be presumptuous to say, well, this is right, this is correct. You know, we might read all kinds of things on the internet and go, oh, well, I read this. But there's no verification, there's no real proof or evidence. So it would be presumptuous to take that to heart. Another definition, to take upon oneself, act presumptuously without permission. So take, you know, just like I gave the example of the yogurt, it's really not yours to do what you want with. So it's presumptuous to take somebody's property and to do what you want with it. And I've made the mistake. I'm guilty of this. I've done this in the past more than once where I've made the mistake of doing something presumptuous with, it was not my place. Take liberties, another definition, to take liberties or act with too much confidence. Again, it's like putting yourself in the position that you should not be in. And then another definition, arrogant behavior that one has no right to. So the definition of presumption, presume, it carries with it a caveat. Doesn't it? It is a warning. And we see that it has much to do with authority. You know, what authority do we have? Are we overstepping our bounds? You know, and how much authority do we have when it comes to matters of the church, when it comes to matters of doctrine, or even administrative decisions within the church? Because God has ordained individuals to make those decisions, to go to when we need counsel. He has put people in positions of authority regarding procedures that he has set in the Bible of sound doctrine and law, statutes and judgments. And so these individuals that are ordained have a responsibility to make judgments in regards to how to best live a Christian way of life according to the law as written in the Scriptures. And so this can apply to doctrine, it can apply to prophecy, it can apply to administrative decisions, or even it can apply to quandaries between friends and family. And those who act presumptuously are people who will take, or when we act presumptuously, it's taking matters into your own hands when it's really not your place to do that. And it has to do with authority. You know, how various situations are to be handled. And in particular, the focal point of the message today is matters regarding the church. Now, if you go over to Number 16, we have all done things presumptuously at times, whether in the family, at work, socializing, or even within the church. We all, I think, have been guilty of this at times. And the dictionary, and even David relates that presumption has something to do with rejecting authority. It has to do with a level of arrogance. But the kind of overconfidence I want to talk about today is overstepping our bounds when it comes to God's appointed authorities. Now, in the book of Numbers, we have an example of people accusing God's anointed leaders, Moses and Aaron, of being arrogant they actually accused those people ordained by God of being arrogant, of overstepping their bounds. Now notice this here in Numbers 16, verse 1. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, they took men with them, and they rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation. So this is it's not everybody that was behind them, but it was leaders of the congregation. So there's likely more people that were in cahoots, if you let me put it that way, with this. And representatives of the congregation, men of renown, people that were respected among the community. And they gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You take too much upon yourselves for all the congregation is..." Let me just go ahead and say that again. "You take too much upon yourselves for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Eternal is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Eternal?" And so they were going to Moses and Aaron basically saying, "You're being presumptuous. You're making too many calls on your own without seeking our counsel, without putting some of us in charge. We should be in charge as well." And so they were accusing Moses of doing something that we are going to see they were doing themselves. When Moses heard this, it says in verse 4, he fell on his face and he spoke to Korah and all his company, saying, "Tomorrow morning the Eternal will show you who is His and who is holy," or in other words, who is should be in these positions of authority. "And that one whom he chooses, he will cause to come near to him." And so he goes on to tell them, "Do this, take censers, Korah and all your company, and put fire in them and put incense in them before the Eternal tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Eternal chooses is the holy one." And then he goes on to say, "You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi." In other words, you're going too far. He's warning them. And Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi, is it a small thing that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the work of the tabernacle of the Eternal and to stand before the congregation to serve them? Isn't that enough? Is that not good enough for you? And that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you, and you are seeking the priesthood also? And now, so, isn't it enough that what God has done for you and the positions that he has put you in, and now you want to be the priests serving in the temple or the tabernacle at that point? Therefore, you and all your company are gathered together against the Eternal, and what is Aaron that you complain against him?" And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, but they said, "We will not come up. Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of a land of flowing milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you should keep acting like a prince over us?" So again, these accusations of presumption. "Moreover, have you not brought us into a land filled with milk and honey? Where is it? Where is our great reward? Where is our promise from the Eternal? Nor given us inheritance of fields or vineyards? Will you put the eyes of these men out? We will not come up." And Moses was very angry and said to the Eternal, "Do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, nor have I hurt one of them." In other words, he wasn't in this for himself. Moses wasn't doing this for his own sake. He wasn't trying to exalt himself. He didn't become rich out of this. He wasn't getting the choicest of animals or getting paid for this. Moses was very angry. And he said to Korah, verse 16, "Tomorrow you and all your company will be present before the Eternal, you and they, as well as Aaron. Let each take a censer and put incense in it, and each of you bring a censer before the Eternal, 250 censers, both you and Aaron, each with a censer." And so every man took a censer and put fire in it, laid incense on it, and stood at the door of the tabernacle of meeting with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all the congregation against them at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. And then the glory of the Eternal appeared to all the congregation. And the Eternal spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "Separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And then they fell on their faces. And they said, "O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin and you be angry with all the congregation?" In other words, they didn't want to see people hurt. They didn't want to see people perish. But the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the congregation, saying, get away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram." And Moses rose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation, saying, "Depart now from the tents of these wicked men. Touch not, or touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all their sins." And so they got away from around the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents with their wives, their sons, and their little children. And Moses said, "By this you shall know that the Eternal has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own will." He wasn't acting on his own behalf. He wasn't in it for, he wasn't trying to feed his ego. He wasn't in it for personal gain in this life. "And if these men die naturally, like all men, or if they are visited by common fate of all men, then the Eternal has not sent me. But if the Eternal creates a new thing, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into the pit, then you will understand that these men have rejected the Eternal." Yeah, they were pointing their fingers at Moses and Aaron, but really, who were they pointing their fingers at? God. Because God put these men in these positions, and they didn't like it. "Now it came to pass, as he finished speaking all these words, that the ground split apart under them, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households, and all the men with Korah, and all their goods. And so they and all those that were with them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from among the assembly." That must have been just a frightening thing to witness. "And then all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, 'Lest the earth swallow us up also.'" And then, because these were not the only individuals that were in cahoots with this rebellion, "a fire came out of from the Eternal and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense. And then the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, 'Tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, to pick up the censers out of the blaze, for they are holy, and scatter the fire some distance away. And the censers of these men who sinned against their own souls, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar, because they presented them before the Eternal.'" And let's go ahead and go down to verse 41. "On the next day, all the congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses," as if this incident was not intimidating enough for them to say, "Okay, God's in charge here, we understand." But no, they complained against Moses and Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of the Eternal. It's your fault." "Now it happened when the congregation had gathered against Moses and Aaron, and they turned toward the tabernacle of meeting, and suddenly a cloud covered it, and the glory of the Eternal appeared. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of meeting, and the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, 'Get away from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment.' And again, they fell on their faces. And Moses and Aaron said, 'Take a censer and put fire in it from the altar and put incense on it and take it quickly to the congregation and make an atonement for them. For wrath has gone out from the Eternal and the plague has begun.'" So they were trying to, even though those people were rebelling against Moses and Aaron, they were trying to help the people still, because that's the positions they were put in. They were put in to be, you know, to as representatives of God, but also to come to God on behalf of the people, to try to help them. "So Aaron took it as Moses commanded. He ran into the midst of the assembly, and already the plague had begun among the people. And he put incense in this, and he made atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living. And then the plague was stopped. And those who died in this plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the Korah incident. And so we see that this matter of presumption is a big deal to God. He doesn't take this lightly when it comes to a matter of authority, positions of authority, and who should have those positions of authority within the congregation, in this case, the congregation in the wilderness. But what does this mean for us today? What can we reap from this story and others? What does it mean to the church of God and the churches of God? And I put them in, there's associated categories, but when I say church of God, I use like a capital C, church of God. It's God's church. It's a wider term, the wider church of God. But then there are the churches of God, which you could put in, you know, small caps, churches of God, because they are organizations. They're all organizations. They're a part of the body of the church. But sometimes we see that some of these organizations call themselves Church of God people or folk, we're not all behaving like Church of God people, at least not in every way. Now, there was a time when the ministry was highly respected by the wider Church of God, by the lay members, if you let me put it that way. People had confidence in the ministry, and they had respect for the ministry, and they abided by the decisions that were made by the Church of God. For decades, this was the case. And I'm talking about, of course, in the recent Church of God history, in the last, you know, century. But there were occasions when that respect for the ministry led some ministers to take too much upon themselves. Perhaps some were fed by ego, and they overstepped their authority at times. This wasn't something that was widespread, although it did happen more than on a few occasions. It did happen. But we see people look back at some of those mistakes that the ministry made during that time, and that's what they like to focus on, the mistakes, the problems, the issues. And they don't want to look at or give too much credit to all of the good that was done in the Church of God under the leadership of Herbert Armstrong. Because there was an enormous amount of good and positivity that took place during the Church of God under Mr. Armstrong's leadership. But that's not what many people want to focus on. And we see that some ministers that may have overstepped their bounds at times, took too much upon themselves. It's still happening today in some organizations. I hear stories, sometimes I call them horror stories, only because, in my opinion, some of these ministers should know better than to do things like that. But it's not widespread as far as, you know, the majority, but it does happen in the wider Church of God, in the organizations that call themselves the Church of God today. And while mistakes have been made, some have learned from mistakes and have grown, have changed and made adjustments to better serve the Church of God, to be better people and better ministers. But there are thousands of people, not, I'm not talking about ministers, there are thousands in the wider Church of God, mostly lay members, who have taken a wrong turn because of some of the issues, the difficulties, the disagreements. And there are large numbers today that call themselves Church of God folk who now have little respect for the ministry. There are many who criticize it, who attempt to discredit the work that was done through Mr. Armstrong, through the ministers during his time, and even going forward. And there are individuals who have taken it upon themselves now to create their own organizations, to do their own work, to have their own Sabbath services, holy day sites, create, you know, proclaim their own holy day sites, and to attempt to behave like a Church of God organization, but they have no ordained ministry. Nobody put in charge, but they'll put their own people in charge instead of allowing God to choose who was going to lead the group. And so in this way, they set themselves up as their own authority. There's no real check and balance. Nobody there to say, no, wait a minute. You're going too far to the left or to the right. You got to stay on track here. And I've seen people that are actually proud of this. One group I contacted years ago, calling themselves an independent group, said, we don't have elders in our church. They just rejected the idea of having elders altogether. And I've seen some of these groups concoct strange interpretations of prophecy and of doctrine. And in this way, they are misleading people. I've seen them mislead people because there are a number of people in the Church of God that have itching ears. They're looking outside of the church now to see what they can learn. Some even have become messianic, and they're looking to even outside of the Church of God, looking at other sources for knowledge and understanding. And while some of these people may have claimed to climb out of one ditch, I see in this way that they fall into another, and perhaps even far worse, ditch. Because God's way, it's undeniable, and even those people that have done this, it's undeniable that God's way is about government. It has much to do with authority, and God has always called certain people to be ordained as elders, ministers in his church, to lead the people, to try to keep them on track, to have a position of authority over a larger audience. Now, in ancient times, we see that God spoke to prophets. He spoke to prophets are also called seers in the Old Testament. He spoke to many of them directly to them. And these people had positions of authority because God was talking directly to them. And those individuals, we see many of them, actually took others under their wing to be their successor. We have Elijah and Elisha, for example. And there are others. And so there has been a successive line of ordination from the time of Moses down to the time of the apostles, and even going forward after that, even unto our day. And it's the responsibility of those people who revere God to listen to these people that God puts into positions of authority, to respect that authority, even if they don't like the people that are in charge. Now, I'm not telling any of us to go against the commandment. When somebody that's ordained, it says, it's okay to break the commandment because of the situation. I'm not saying go along with that. I'm just saying we have to respect those positions, and we can't be presumptuous and say, I don't like what that guy's saying. I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to start my own organization. I'm going to have my own work going on outside of the Church of God because I don't like what's going on over here and over there. Now, Israel was called, like I said just a few minutes ago, the church or the congregation in the wilderness. And this was expressed even in the New Testament books. And those people were given an authority figure of Moses and Aaron, and then the descendants of Aaron. A number of Levites were put in positions of authority. And Numbers 11, actually, I'm not going to go there, but Numbers chapter 11, Moses is depicted as being so stressed out because of all of the responsibility that he had that he desired to die. He actually wanted to die, and we might kind of laugh about it a little bit now, but Moses, I don't think, was laughing. He was so stressed. All of these people coming to him with all of these issues, and he was one of the few that was taking care of everything. And so God helped him, though. He spoke to God. He cried out to him, and God helped him. God helped him to maintain law and order among the congregation in the wilderness by ordaining 70 elders. 70 elders. He gave them the same spirit that Moses had, the same understanding that Moses had. Now, that group of men continued, and as they, had gotten older, as they died, they ordained others to take their place. Those became known as the Sanhedrin. And even during Christ's time, during Christ's ministry, he said, whatever the elders teach you or tell you to do, to observe and do, that observe and do. Do those things. Why? Did he tell people to do that? Because they sit in Moses' seat. Moses was ordained by God, called by God. God ordained others to help Moses. Those people ordained others as time went on, and that succession has continued. So he told them, whatever they tell you to observe and do, do it. And of course, this is in the context of keeping the law. Christ would never tell anybody, if they tell you to break the commandment, break it. No, that's not even an option. The context is within the constraints of God's law. Now, Israel continued to be considered a congregation unto God, and they were under the authority of the judges for many decades. But there came a point where everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And I'm quoting the scripture. Everyone was doing what was right in his own eyes. And God didn't like this one single bit. Why? It's presumptuous. People started, you know, making up their own interpretations of how to keep the law and when should it be applied and how it should be applied. And there is a big lesson in all of this for us today, because those people had ordained authorities. And for people to take that authority upon themselves, I believe this is a presumptuous sin, the kind of sin that David referred to when he said that it is a great transgression. Because God cares so much about this issue of authority and presumption that he told Israel that if he ordained men to be in positions of authority regarding doctrine and moral behavior and even civil behavior, if you bring something to them and they say, here's how to handle it, and you say, nope, I'm not going to do that, they should be put to death. Those people were to be put to death. He wasn't going to have that kind of rebellion among a nation under God that he was trying to establish. Now, in the New Testament, let's go ahead and go over there to Matthew 18. In the New Testament, Christ gave us an example of bringing matters before ordained ministers. And I think many people in the Church of God for many years have misinterpreted what he said here in Matthew 18. So I'd like to just read over it briefly. We actually have an entire booklet on the subject called The Truth About Matthew 18. I think it's a really helpful booklet if you haven't read it. And so he says here, Matthew 18, verse 15, he says, moreover, if a brother sins against you, well, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. Then if he hears you, you have gained your brother. In other words, if he understands and he says, oh, you know, there's this reconciliation, I'm sorry, I'll try to make this right, let's make it right. Great, that's how we should handle it. Go to the brother first. Not to the minister first, go to the brother first. And try to work it out among yourselves. But if he will not hear you, then take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. So in other words, if he's not going to listen to your concern, something that has really offended or hurt you, bring a witness. Bring somebody that, you know, can relate and explain it. And maybe together it'll work out. And 99% of the time, issues among brethren are going to be worked out by doing one of these first two steps. But what do many people do when they're offended by a brother in the church? They skip these first two and they go right to the ministry. But that is the last resort. But in any case, let's go on to here the third step here, if that doesn't work. In verse 17, if he refuses to hear them, well, tell it to the church. And he isn't talking about the congregation. Christ was not saying, let's broadcast the offense, the sin, all among the people. Let's get everybody involved here. That would be really, messy. very messy. People begin to take sides, and it's just a whole mess of things that could take place if that was done. He's talking about bringing it to the church leadership. Bring it to the church. But if he refuses to hear even the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. In other words, he's saying, you know, if you take it to the ministry and they judge the matter and they say, here's the judgment, here's what needs to be done, and they say, I'm not doing that, they're out. Let them be like a heathen. It's similar to God saying, you know, if they're not going to listen to the judgments of those ordained Levites, get rid of them. We don't want those kind of people here. It's a problem. It's going to be a problem. Assuredly, I say to you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. So he is talking to the ministry here. That is who Christ is talking to. He is talking to those disciples that would become apostles. He said, whatever decision you make, God's going to sanction that decision. And now again, the context is within the boundaries of God's law. Never going out, stepping outside the boundaries of the law. But sometimes a decision needs to be made. Sometimes there is something that is not exactly stated in the law, so you need to seek counsel. And when these ordained individuals talk about it and they discuss it, and okay, here's what needs to be done, within the boundaries of the law, we have to abide by that. If we don't, it's like he said, it's like being a heathen. We don't want that kind of rebellion here. We don't want the type of attitude that Korah had here. Assuredly, I say to you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. God will be in the decision. And then he goes on to say, I say to you, if two of you agree on earth concerning anything that they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. So he's saying you're counseling together within the boundaries of God's law. You have ordination. You have God's Spirit. I'm going to be in the midst of the decision. And he goes on to say, and that's the context. Many people kind of skip this first part of Matthew 18 and go right to verse 20 and say, for where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them. Then some people say like, oh, see, we can have a church, or you know, we're a church as long as there's two or three gathered in his name, we're a church. That's not the context at all. It's talking about decisions being made within the church. Doesn't mean as long as we have two people that agree, we can start our own church. No, if you bring an issue to the church and two or three ministers agree that here's what needs to be done, God will be in the midst of the decision. That is what Christ was saying. And I think it's similar to what was said in Numbers 17. Well, many have lost respect for authority, both in and outside of the church. We see this, obviously, throughout the streets of America today, that there are many people that are trying to overrun their communities, their city. They have little to no respect for the president, disdain even for the office of the presidency, at least under the current leader, Donald Trump. And in fact, many people have vile hatred for the president and for his administration and for police officers. It's really crazy to see this happening, but we see it happening, that there is such little respect among hundreds of thousands. I wouldn't say it's the majority, because I think it's definitely the majority are against what's going on, but a lot of people just don't want to speak up. They're afraid that the angry mob is going to turn their hatred on them if they speak up and say, this is wrong, what you people are doing. But it is something that is growing. It's a movement that is growing. A hatred for police and immigration agents, people who are there and put in positions of authority to maintain law and order. And they have this hatred and this rejection of all authority in this regard because of what? Because of some mistakes or some wrongdoings of a very few. Now, is something similar happening in the Church of God? Can we see that? Because of the mistakes or the wrongdoings of a few ministers, people are rejecting the ministry entirely? doing their own thing, everybody doing what's right in their own eyes? I think there is a comparison here. And even among families, the family structure, that is, God ordained the family structure to be a man and a woman and children, and the man is to be in charge. He's the head of household, the head of the family. Everyone in the family is under his authority. Doesn't mean he's supposed to abuse that authority. Doesn't mean he's supposed to mistreat people. No, that's wrong. But he does have that position. You try to tell that to some people out in the world today, you're going to get some angry, mostly women, but you're going to get some angry people in society. Who do you think you are? Tell me, no way. My husband's not the head of me. I make decisions. Or we do this together. And really, that is how it should be done. It should be done together. But the bottom line is the man has that position. He's the head of household. He has a position of authority over the woman. But people don't want to hear that today. And I think even in the Church of God, you get some uncomfortable women in the audience when you're giving a message talking about the woman having to be subject to the man. Kind of ruffles feathers a little bit. Even though people know it's right and true, but I think some people just get that little feeling of, I don't really like to hear that. But again, I think it's because we live in a society where this is widely rejected. And it influences the Church of God. It does influence us. And we can't let it. Because Satan has convinced thousands, millions, billions, if you consider the numbers throughout history, that there is no authority, no real authority in your life. That you need to take control. That you could, can, and should be your own authority. You make the decisions. And then we get to everybody doing what's right in their own eyes. And we're fooling ourselves if we think this has not affected the Church of God. It has affected the Church of God. Now, I remember exchanging words with a particular few people a while back, some people who I believe were sincere in their efforts, but violating the scriptures in several ways. And they were violating them when it comes to this matter of authority, of who has authority in the church and who has the ability to make certain decisions in the church. Now, one of the excuses I heard on their part when I was trying to show them what the scriptures say in this regard, one of the excuses I heard was, I have the Spirit of God. I don't need any minister to tell me what to do. Well, what are you going to do with that? It's everybody doing what's right in his own eyes. Now, sure, we shouldn't need a minister to tell us what to do, of course, if we're all doing what's right. But frankly, we all fight against the same rebellious attitude as the rest of the world. We do. Maybe to a lesser degree, but we do fight it. It influences all of us at times. And even though you and I live in difficult times right now, and times seem to be getting worse, it's still relatively good for us now. We have it pretty good for now. You know, we all have homes to live in. We have a roof over our head. We all have food to eat. And there is a green tree out there when it comes to, you know, literature or sermons, videos. We have all kinds of material available to us regarding Church of God, doctrine, teaching, prophecy, understanding, ways to better ourselves, to better prepare ourselves for the return of Christ. It is a green tree out there when it comes to milk and meat to feed the flock. But with all the groups out there, you know, if you don't like one, I really don't like what that guy said. I'm going to go to another. You can go to another. You can do that. You can skip from group to group and go around and around if you want to do that. I don't recommend it, but you can do that. It is an option because there are many organizations out there. If you don't like what one teaches, you can go to another and see, well, maybe I like this one better. But could it be that we're just picking and choosing for ourselves what we want to hear? Because sometimes when you hear something that we don't like, and I'm not saying this is within the context of God's law, keeping the commandments. I'm not saying hearing a minister say that we should be able to break one of God's commandments or break a principle. But we might hear something we don't like. We better think about why we don't like it. Could it be because it's something we need to fix, that we need to change, we need to work on? because God puts ministers in positions of authority so that he can help the flock, so that we can help the flock, so that we can help people to better themselves in preparation for Christ's return, to be one of his chosen, one of the elect. So, for some people, though, they might jump from group to group for a little while. Maybe they only pick a few groups, but it might get to the point to where, well, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to build my own website. I'm going to start my own work. I'm going to have my own organization, host my own services, have our own holy day sites. Let's take these positions of authority away from the ministry. Let's do it ourselves, because they think they can do it better. And many of these groups I've seen out there, they actually get their literature, their information, their sermons, their videos from ordained individuals within the wider Church of God. And they'll use those for their own purposes, to do their own work, or maybe to just criticize at times. I think sometimes they'll use a message or a piece of literature just to criticize it. But is that what God wants? Is that really what he wants his people to do, to bounce around and then to eventually take matters into their own hands and do what's right in their own eyes? Or would he call that presumptuous? Could it be a great transgression to him? Assuming that because we know the Bible, and there are lay members out there, I will admit, there are some lay members out there that have a better understanding of some issues in the Bible than many ministers. But does that mean they have the right to start their own work, to do their own thing, to have our own group? Because we don't have any of those elders here, I saw one person say. We don't have that here, so we can just do what's right according to the Bible because we don't have any ministers. Really? Or does that actually give you room or ability to further go off track? Because I've seen that happen, and I am seeing it happen right now as we speak, among some people calling themselves Church of God groups that are doing their own thing. And it's dangerous. It's presumptuous. I think this does relate to the great transgression that David sung about. Now, in the book of Judges, and I'm not going to go there, but Judges 17 and 18, there's a story about a man named Micah. Now, this man, he had built an altar at his home, and he desired to have his own priest that would serve him and his household. And so he found this traveling Levite that was going through the country, and he said, I want you to be my priest. You're going to, basically ordaining him himself to be the priest to him and his household. And you live here and you serve me. And this was a presumptuous act. God was not in favor of this. He did not inspire it. He was acting presumptuously, putting someone in charge that he wanted to be in charge. And this Levite, he went along with it. Why, we don't know exactly, could have been a combination. Maybe he enjoyed the free ride, the free room and board, the food, and I'm sure it fed his ego quite a bit. But something similar is happening in the Church of God today, and has been happening for many years, where men are putting themselves in these positions, putting themselves behind a podium, putting themselves on a pedestal, putting themselves behind a web camera, and broadcasting to the world, selecting their own leadership because this guy speaks really good. He's charismatic. We like to hear him speak. He's animated. We like this. And then we see these individuals acting as though they're priests when they don't have the authority. They don't have the ordination. They don't have somebody in there to say, wait a minute, this is going against the scriptures. Because that has happened in the Protestant world for hundreds, thousands of years now, a couple thousand years, I should say, where people have misused the Bible. And they figure ways to maneuver around it to preach something they want to preach instead of what the Bible wants them to preach. And it's happening in the Church of God on a wider and wider level as time moves on. And so these people may claim that their Bible is their only authority. So do the Catholics. So do the Protestants. They claim the Bible is their only authority. But we've seen many of them lead people astray, and I see it happening in the Church of God today. And I think it's presumptuous, and it has to do with this, with, like I said, the definition of presumption or presume to take upon oneself the authority that is not rightly theirs. It wasn't ordained by God. It wasn't sanctioned by Him. God did not speak to them directly and say, you are going to be my man. I want you to do this and to do this and to do this. It hasn't happened to these people. I think it will happen when the two witnesses come on the scene, that God will speak directly to them, and they're not going to, of their own accord, go, well, you know what, I think I'm one of the two witnesses. Yeah, that sounds good. People have done that. I think there's been at least four individuals that I can think of offhand, maybe six, over the last 10 years that have claimed to be the two witnesses. But they won't go as far as to say, God spoke to me and told me this. But they feel like, oh, I kind of feel like I'm one of the two. You know, I'm doing a kind of witness type work. It's dangerous. I think it's presumptuous. Because these individuals that I know of, that I can think of, that have claimed to be the two witnesses, they have greatly misled people. Let's go to 2 Peter 2. During the formative years of the prophet Samuel, the high priest at the time of Samuel's birth was a man named Eli. Now, Eli was a decent man. He was. And he's, you know, people, of course, I think, like to focus on the faults of Eli. But the fact is, God did work with Eli. He spoke to him directly. He inspired Eli, and Eli listened much of the time. But the sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, these individuals were extremely corrupt. They took advantage of their positions, their authority. They took things of the offerings that were not theirs. They even slept around with some of the women that would come to the tabernacle. But even though these individuals were corrupt, and Eli did not put his foot down hard enough, I should say, he did try to tell them to stop these things, but he wasn't hard enough on Phinehas and Hophni. Even though these individuals were corrupt, God never told the people of Israel, stop tithing, stop obeying their authority, stop supporting the ministry, do your own thing. Never. Because there is a principle here, a principle of who God puts in charge. And if those people are corrupt, if they deserve correction, it's going to come. And it's going to come from God. And this was the same thing during Christ's time. You know, God said, do as they say, but don't do as they do. Do as the elders tell you within the boundaries of the law, but don't do as they do. Because they would see, well, many of these people are, you know, are corrupt. They're not really behaving the way they should. Well, that's why he's saying, well, don't do like them. But they're teaching the law, so keep the law. Do as they do, as they say, not as they do. So God in Christ never said, take matters into your own hands. That was something that Christ would do. He had the position, the ability to say, I'm ordaining these men. They're going to be the ones I'm going to build the church on now. To put ourselves in that position is presumptuous, and I think a great transgression. But God said, you know, if there are people in positions that are disobedient, they're not loyal, that He is going to deal with the injustice. It's not going to be pleasant for them. So don't think that because we're letting it, you know, we're not starting our own work or doing our own thing, or we possibly might be letting it slide, if you know, if I can put it that way, that they're going to get away with it. No, God's not going to let it slide. He's going to correct the matter. And he said this, I think, through, he inspired the Apostle Peter to say this in 2 Peter 2 and verse 9. He said, the Eternal knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment, and especially those who walk according to the flesh and the lust of uncleanness, and those who despise authority. They are presumptuous, self-willed. They are not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. Does this sound anything like what has happened in recent decades? Speaking evil of dignitaries? Mr. Armstrong, Church of God ministers, I've heard people say terrible things about some of the individuals in the worldwide Church of God, simply because there were mistakes that were made, and sometimes there were some abuses of authority. Speaking evil of dignitaries, but he goes on to say this, Peter went on to say, whereas angels who are greater in power and might do not bring a reviling accusation against them before the Eternal. So angels are not accusers of the brethren, but brethren are the accusers of the brethren. What's happening here? That's not our place. It's presumptuous. So that's why we have taken a policy, and has always been the policy since the Eternal Church of God started 20 years ago. When there is a matter that needs discussed in a sermon, or even, you know, through email, somebody brings a matter that needs discussed and addressed, we don't name the people from the pulpit. We'll talk about it and we'll say, here's the matter, here's the issue, and here's where it's wrong. But we're not going to start accusing the brethren, pointing the finger at certain people. That's not our place to do that. And if it's not the place of a minister to do that, what makes people think it's their place when they're not ordained? You know, we can look at the matter. We should. When there are wrongs that have taken place, we should examine it and say, where did we go wrong? Where can we be better? Let's work at that. Let's be better. But don't start pointing fingers at people saying, they did this, and this person did this, and they did that, and we're better than them. Are we? God puts people in positions of authority for His purpose, and I think it's presumptuous, not I think, I know it is presumptuous for people to take such authority upon themselves. And there's another example here in Jude. Let's go over to Jude. And we're going to read verses 9 through 12. Another example here. Because Peter just left off saying angels don't even bring a reviling accusation before the Eternal. And here we have the example of Michael, the archangel, one of the greatest of angels, in contending with the devil when he disputed about the body of Moses, dared not bring against him a reviling accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke you." The Lord rebuke. It wasn't his place. As wicked and evil as Satan is, Michael knew his place. God had given Lucifer, who became Satan, a position of authority. He still has that position. And he wasn't going to bring this reviling accusation against him, right or not, even if his words would have been accurate. He said, the Lord's going to do it. It's between you and him. It's not my place. But these, he goes on to say, of people that feel that it is their place, these speak evil of whatever they do not know, and whatever they know naturally, like brute beasts in these things, they corrupt themselves. Woe to them, for they have gone in the way of Cain and have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit and perished in the rebellion of Korah. So he's giving this example of things that were done by people presumptuously. The rebellion of Korah, taking it upon themselves to say, who are you to tell me what to do? Oh, it doesn't matter if you are ordained. That's what Korah did. These are spots, verse 12, these are spots in your love feasts. And while they feast with you without fear, serving only themselves, their clouds without water, carried about by the winds, laid on them trees without fruit, twice dead, pulled up by the roots, raging waves of the sea, foaming up in their own shame, wandering stars for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. So here he is saying, who is he talking about? Who is he talking about? Because he says, these are spots in your love feasts. These are people that are attending with you or call themselves Christians. We're like you. But they're serving their own themselves. Whether it's ego or they think they know better, it's presumption. And this is the issue I'm getting at today, because it's not up to us individually to tell God, or even collectively, it's not up to us to tell God what to do and who he should do it with. It's not up to us to make that decision for God. And there are going to be false teachers among us. It is going to happen. It was prophesied to happen by Christ, by Paul, by Peter, by John, and others. We know it's going to happen, and it is happening even as we speak. And sometimes we're going to be vexed by some of this, by unrighteous speech or conduct. But sometimes people think that because they see someone that has been put into a position of authority in the church, because they see them make some mistakes or do something that is wrong, something they don't agree with, that they have the right to take authority upon themselves, to put themselves in that position. I'm saying it's presumptuous. And I'm asking us to think again, to not go there. Now, I'm not saying that ministers who teach it's okay to break the commandments. I keep coming back to that because some people are thinking, well, wait a minute. The minister of my church was saying to do this, and that's wrong. I'm not saying to go along with things that are wrong. I'm just saying we still have to respect the authority. We still have to revere God above all else, but we have to have respect for the authority figures that he puts in charge. Presumption is something that is very dangerous, and assuming the role of a minister in the Church of God without going through the proper channels is, I think, a great transgression. Something that we should greatly fear. When we consider how God feels about it, how he said to Israel, put those people to death if they think they're going to take authority upon themselves. Kick those people out of the church if they're not going to abide by the decisions of my ordain. God's serious about this. We should be serious about it too. It's not something to take lightly. And so let's go over to 1 Samuel 13 for a few more scriptures before we end. 1 Samuel 13. You know, there was a time when the Church of God in the last century observed a Monday Pentecost. Now, this is something that was incorrect. Pentecost is not Monday, even though some people have an argument that it is Monday. It was proven to be on Sunday. But for a time, Monday Pentecost was observed. Now, there was a very prominent and very smart individual in the Church of God by the name of Herman Hay. Now, Herman Hay observed a Sunday Pentecost at the time when the Church of God, under Mr. Armstrong's leadership, kept a Monday Pentecost. But he didn't go out preaching to people saying, the church is wrong, you're wrong in that. He didn't start his own organization and saying, we're the Sunday Pentecost Church of God. No. What he did is he kept Pentecost on Sunday on his own. And he also went to services on Monday, and he waited for God to fix it. Yeah, he talked about it with people, with other ministers in the church, and eventually Mr. Armstrong examined the issue and he said, we need to go to Sunday. And so he waited for it to happen. He didn't start his own work and do his own thing, because I believe Herman Hay, in his wisdom, understood that would have been presumptuous to start proclaiming his own holy days and have his own Church of God organization. And we can learn a big lesson from this. And we can learn an enormous lesson from King Saul. King Saul in 1 Samuel 13, in verse 1, this is obviously after he was ordained as king and after he had gone out to fight against some of the enemies of Israel. And Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose for himself 3,000 men of Israel. 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in the mountains of Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent away, every man to his tent. So he chose the choicest of the fighting men here as he began to build an army. Jonathan attacked the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it. And then Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." And all Israel heard it. And Saul attacked the garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel had also become an abomination to the Philistines. And the people were called together to Saul at Gilgal. And the Philistines gathered together to fight with Israel 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand in which is in the seashore. And they came up and encamped in Michmash to the east of Beth-Aven. And when the men of Israel saw that they were in danger, for the people were distressed, then the people hid in caves and thickets and rocks and holes and in pits. And some of the Hebrews crossed over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. But as for Saul, he was still in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. And then he waited 7 days, according to the time set by Samuel. So Samuel was telling Saul, here's what you need to do. You want to be successful? You need to be obedient to God. And you need to be obedient to God's servant, Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and all the people were scattered from him. And so Saul said, "Bring a burnt offering and peace offerings here to me." And he offered the burnt offering. And now it happened, as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, that Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him, that he might greet him. And Samuel said, "What have you done?" Well, Saul said, I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash. And then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made a supplication to the Eternal. And therefore, I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering. In other words, I was presumptuous. And Samuel said to Saul, "You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Eternal your God, which he commanded you. For now the Eternal would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Eternal has sought for himself a man after his own heart," referring to David, "and the Eternal has commanded him to be a commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Eternal commanded you." So Saul was given instructions by Samuel. Here's what you need to do. Some would consider these administrative instructions. But regardless, they were instructions given by a man ordained by God to handle those things. And he didn't follow them. He was presumptuous. This wasn't the first occasion. This happened several times. And God said, enough is enough. You had your opportunity, your chance. I'm going to pick somebody else now. And if we think about it, this act of presumption was actually the first sin committed by humankind. It is. Eve and then Adam chose to take from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Something God said, don't do this. They said, wait a minute, I think this will be a benefit to us. It was presumptuous. They took that authority upon themselves. And I think this is likely the great transgression that David spoke of. Because you and I, we have all eaten from the same tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We all still struggle with this at times, this matter of presumption. But we can avoid it. We can avoid presumptuous sins, and we can prove all things as we maneuver through the mixed signals that we receive in this world, and even sometimes some of the mixed signals that we might receive from the wider Church of God, listening to a sermon here, reading a booklet there, and sometimes there are things that conflict. But it's our duty, our responsibility, to discern between them, to prove all things and hold fast to those things that are good. And I wish there were an easier answer to our predicament. You know, at one time, the Church of God was a very large organization, and it was filled with thousands of people who respected authority, who were working toward the same goal. We don't have that anymore today. We're scattered. Today, we have many organizations that call themselves Church of God, and several of them have no ordained ministry, but they're doing something on their own. And within these groups, we have a lot of people who sincerely, I think, want to follow God. They do sincerely want to follow God, but they're being given conflicting information, sometimes wrong information. And there's a heavy responsibility on those people that are appointed and ordained to be leaders, a heavy responsibility. They have a greater judgment, as a matter of fact. And this is why the ordained leadership is so important. That God never ever said, in fact, he confirmed that he would have ordained ministers within the body of his church. So that there is an ordained authority who is going to be held responsible for some of those things that take place in the wider Church of God. That they should have known better. Or, good job, you did the right thing. And this is why James said, "Brethren, let not many of you become teachers." Why? "Knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment." A stricter, does any of us want to have a stricter judgment? I certainly don't. You know, when I was asked to be ordained as an elder, it wasn't something that I desired. I did it because it was needed, and I had fulfilled the requirements of becoming an elder. It's not something, I didn't want to feed my ego, I didn't want any personal gain from it. It was in need. And I believe God led me to be ordained in the church. It's a big responsibility. A big responsibility. Who would want the stricter judgment unless it is something that God is calling you to do? And that is something that God is leading us to do. And he allows us to go through the proper channels if it's something that he wants. But regardless of this, even lay members have a big responsibility. We do. Don't think you're off the hook. Just put it on the shoulders of the minister. No, we all have a big responsibility to prove all things, because there are things and will be things that are said in the wider Church of God that are not accurate. And perhaps we might have itching ears at times, and we might sound a little attractive. Ooh, what's that? I want to hear what that's about. And maybe it's appealing and kind of sucks us in a little bit. But we need to prove it. We better prove that it's right if we're going to follow it, if we're going to believe it, because it might sound good to us, might sound very appealing to attend with a group, you know, who denies ordained leadership, who calls themselves independent. I still don't quite understand that. We're independent. We're Church of God, but we're independent. I don't really kind of get how it's independent from the Church of God. To me, it's kind of contrary to being a part of the Church of God. But it might sound good. It might, you know, to not have authority over us. But that's what the world is doing. They don't want authority over them. Let's get rid of the police. Let's get rid of the president. Put the people in charge. Sound familiar? Don't fall into that ditch. Don't think we're getting ourselves out of one ditch and then fall into another. Let's be wise as serpents, but let's be harmless as doves. And let's not act presumptuously so that we can avoid the great transgression.